What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to Off the Chain, simply the best podcast in crypto. Let's kick this thing off. Charlie Lee is the founder of Litecoin. In this conversation, we discuss the early days of Coinbase, why Charlie originally built Litecoin, how crypto has evolved over the last decade, what the current challenges in the industry are, and where Charlie sees Bitcoin and Litecoin going in the future. I really enjoyed this live conversation. I found Charlie to be both intelligent and entertaining, and I hope you enjoy it nearly as much as I did. The decentralized Monarch wallet is bringing the best of all crypto services to one wallet. The Monarch Wallet. You can buy, sell, swap, and send thousands of cryptocurrencies. You can even earn interest, use their portfolio tracker, keep track of the news, and do much more. All you have to do is go download it today on Apple or Android. Monarch, rule your financial kingdom from the palm of your hand today.
Anthony Pompliano is a partner at Morgan Creek Digital. All opinions expressed by Pomp or his guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Morgan Creek Digital or Morgan Creek Capital Management. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
We are live at CIS. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
What's been going on? How are things going?
Well, the price is up. So.
People are excited about prices being up.
Yeah. I'm going to take full credit for the price going up.
All right. We'll get into that. Why that happened.
Well, I get blamed every time the price goes down, so might as well get something out of it.
Before we get into what's going on today, let's talk about your background. So a lot of people know you as Charlie Lee, founder of Litecoin and Crypto Bull, if you will. But you had a life before crypto. Maybe let's talk about kind of growing up and then how you got to Google.
Sure. Yeah. What do you want to know?
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Ivory Coast.
Okay.
So West Africa.
Got it. And came to the US when?
When I was 13.
13?
Came out to New Jersey for boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to MIT for college.
Got it. What was the experience going from West Africa to New Jersey? We could have sent you a lot better places than New Jersey.
Pretty drastic. I mean, Ivory Coast was really hot and New Jersey is really cold. So... and then also like boarding school, so living just by myself. And so it's pretty drastic move, yeah.
Yeah. And you did this for high school?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. And before you came to the US, how technologically savvy were you? Were you into computers, not into computers?
I was. My dad got us a Apple 2GS way back when I was like 10 or something.
Yeah.
So started doing some basic programming. So really got into computing.
Got it. So you're into computers and obviously not smart because you ended up at MIT. So what'd you study there?
Computer science. Go figure. Yeah.
And then while you were going to school, what did you think you were going to end up doing? Did you have a plan?
I planned to create the currency that I created.
All right. So while you were in MIT, you thought you were going
to... Well, I mean, I love computer science, and I guess from an early age, I really love programming. So going to MIT, study computer science, electrical engineering, and yeah, didn't actually know what I was going to do afterwards.
Yep. And you go to Google right out of MIT?
No, I went to Silicon Valley out of MIT, worked for a couple startups before Google.
Got it. Yeah. And why leave startups and then go to, at the time, what was another startup, right?
Yeah. Why go to Google?
You joined when, Google?
Let's see. 2007, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, 2007.
Got it. And so why leave kind of the early stage startup stuff to go to Google?
Well, I mean, Google is such a big name, right? It's mm-hmm. a great company, great benefits. Just heard lots of great things about it. So.
Got yeah. it. And what were you doing there?
I worked on a few products, YouTube, mobile, Chrome OS, and also Google Play games.
Got it. Yeah. And in, if I remember correctly, in 2011 is when you first discovered Bitcoin and crypto, or what
yeah.
was that first time you came across it?
I think it was like a a Wired article about Silk Road and how it was exclusively using Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
After reading that, I just had to figure out what the heck's Bitcoin.
Right? What did you do then in 2011, right? You hear about this digital currency that's being used to basically buy drugs and, you know, all this mm-hmm. stuff. How do you go learn about it, right? It's not like there's a bunch of media coverage. There's not a bunch of, you know, blog posts and Twitter accounts. What do you do?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously read the white paper, right? And then back then the community was extremely small. Mm-hmm. It was basically just the Bitcoin talk forum. So everyone in the Bitcoin space was reading and writing on that forum, mm-hmm. bitcointalk.org. I also remember in 2011, we had the first Bitcoin conference in New York, and pretty much like the whole community went and met each other in New York. And back then it was a really small community. I mean, no, everyone's really, really into and excited about Bitcoin, but no one had any idea what it will become. Just mm-hmm. very excited about what the possibilities are.
Yep. And you're doing all this while you're at Google. Are you talking about it internally with people? Is it kind of a taboo to talk about this decentralized digital currency, or what was the relationship between the two?
I wasn't really talking to anyone about it. I mean, it's still like fairly new. Like mm-hmm. no one expected anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you start Litecoin in what, 2013?
No, October 2011.
Oh, you did in 2011. Okay. Yeah. What was the genesis for why to start it, and what were you trying to build?
So back then I traded like Bitcoin locally with people, mm-hmm. like meeting a random person at the Starbucks or McDonald's. I don't know if you guys have done that, but it's a pretty interesting experience. Especially
in 2011.
In 2011, especially when they send me a Bitcoin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes like an hour to confirm.
Mm-hmm.
So every now and then it takes like that long, right? So, but you're sitting across this other person that you just met and you're not sure if they're trying to scam you or not, waiting for a Bitcoin transaction to confirm. So at that point, I realized like it's slow, right? Mm-hmm. At least for this experience. So before Litecoin came out, there were a few other altcoins, and one of them called Solidcoin had a 3-minute block time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually use like Solidcoin back then compared to Bitcoin, it just feels a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that when Satoshi picked the 10-minute block times, it's kind of just a guess, right? It's hard to say what's the optimal time.
Mm-hmm.
So for Litecoin, I decided to make it faster.
Got it. And yeah. So for those that don't know, explain the main differences between Bitcoin and Litecoin.
I mean, the main difference is that it's 4 times faster. So it's 2.5 minutes for block confirmations. Mm-hmm. And has 4 times as many coins and it uses a different proof of work. So the key things I wanted to do when I created Litecoin was to just make it faster mm-hmm. And also make it so that it uses a different proof of work algorithm. So it's not competing with Bitcoin for miners, because I realized it's hard to survive if you're competing with Bitcoin for miners. And I created Litecoin mainly just for fun, right? Mm-hmm. Just to hack around with the Bitcoin code base and just launch something that I thought was better than all the other altcoins out there at that time.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why you were buying Bitcoin in Starbucks and McDonald's was basically because there was no infrastructure at that time, right?
Yeah, there was Mount Gox, right?
Mm-hmm. Never heard of it.
Never, what's that?
Never heard of that one.
Never heard of it. Awesome exchange. but you had to wire money to a bank in Japan
mm-hmm.
or use a money payment processor service that takes a fee. It's kind of really hard to get money into Mt. Gox.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to just use local Bitcoins and meet someone in person and chat about Bitcoin and buy Bitcoins. There weren't really any scammers back then.
Yeah. Well, any like ridiculous experiences when you were meeting up with people, or anything that like you were really scared or you now laugh at?
I mean, I laugh at it because it's just a funny experience, like meeting a random person and like trading real money for fake money, right?
Well, is it fake money or is it just digital money?
Digital money. Who knows, right?
Yeah. And so from like 2011, see, they're warming up. They're waking up. From 2011 until, let's say, kind of 16 pre this last bull market, what are some of the things that really stood out to you as milestones along the way that, that helped us get to where we are today?
As milestones,
or just like the big moments that you're like, you know what, I really remember when this happened, you know, it felt like, hey, this was going to become more real than we previously thought it was.
Funny thing is, I remember all the bad moments, like China banning Bitcoin or exchanges getting hacked. But I mean, just slowly over time, Bitcoin became just more and more for sure. Right. Mm-hmm. When I first found out about it in 2011, it was just like a fun little thing. No one knew where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. Chances of it succeeding was like close to 0%. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, but today it's like so different.
So right? If when you first learned about it in 2011, let's say it was single digit percentage probability it was going to be successful, where would you put that percentage today?
Well, it's already successful, right? So it depends on where, depends on what you consider success, right? Will it become, I think like when I first found about Bitcoin, I really thought it would, it's like the best form of money that human civilization has ever seen. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think it will, I believe that it will eventually become like a world reserve currency.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you think that as Bitcoin kind of marches towards that global reserve status, it needs to displace the existing global reserves, or can it just be another option? Kind of they can coexist as global reserve status.
I think it will coexist. I don't think fiat currency is going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Definitely not in my lifetime. It's my belief.
Got it.
It's, yeah, it'll coexist fine.
And how do, you know, if you take Bitcoin as this is the blue chip currency that, that is most likely to succeed in doing that, how do you view all of these other kind of cryptocurrencies, right? So not the utility tokens, not the other stuff, but the actual digital assets that are trying to serve as a currency. What's their role?
I think there will be like a handful of currencies that actually have real value, right? So I never thought Bitcoin would be the one and only. And as far as how many will actually have real value, it's, I don't know, but mm-hmm. I just think there will be a few, right? It won't be like 1,000 currencies all have value. Mm-hmm. There'll be Bitcoin will be the major one, and there'll be a few other ones.
Yep. And then most of the ones that I think you and I would say have the high probability of being successful today are not backed by governments, but more and more, I think central banks are starting to look at, should they participate? Should they issue their own kind of tokenized fiat currencies? How do you think that plays out? Does that actually impact anything that's happening in the decentralized digital world, or is that kind of separate and just, again, it coexists?
I think it will be good. I mean, it will be different, right? So if it's backed by a government, it's not decentralized. It's not really sound money. So it's it'll be useful. Mm-hmm. It'll be useful if you have a government-backed digital currency that you can easily swap between that and Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And you can store your, as a store of value, you would put your money in a decentralized cryptocurrency. But for usage, maybe a government-backed stable coin would work just fine.
Mm-hmm. And it feels to me like for the use cases, there's a need for different currencies. But what we see today is the things that, let's say, you know, go to any country in the world, you want to walk across a border with a currency, Bitcoin may not be the best thing, right? Just given the price volatility. If all you want to do is preserve the, you know, the wealth that you have for a short duration period of time, it's probably not the best.
Well, but this is just the current situation, right? I believe over time, Bitcoin will become more stable, will be less volatile.
So I agree with you on that. I guess my question is, because it's going to take time to get there, right? There's kind of a maturation of the technology, the adoption in the technology. Does that leave the window open for large corporations or governments to step in with alternative options? And if they kind of wake up and realize that there's value here and they go ahead and they issue that stuff, can it take some of the wind out of the sails of Bitcoin? Or do you think that this is, you know, so inevitable and so unstoppable that that no matter what those guys do, it's not going to matter?
I think it's pretty unstoppable. Yeah. I do believe that it's just it's, you can't easily, like, government backed currency can't compete with Bitcoin.
Yep.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. So let's switch. Before we got up here, I asked everyone what they wanted to talk about, and they wanted to talk about trading. Charlie Lee may be the greatest trader in all of crypto is a constant thing that was in the responses. Talk about 2017, the bull market, kind of what you were thinking. And then obviously when you sold all the Litecoin, I think everyone just looks at that as like the sentinel moment of, you know, at or near the top.
Yeah, so I've been in this space for like 8 years now. I've seen like many bulls in bear market, right? Like three or four. So I've seen, when I first got in, the Bitcoin price was $30. It's cheap, but then when I bought it, it crashed to like two within the next year, right? So that's like an over 90% drop in price. And a lot of people thought Bitcoin was dead, right? Dropped from $30 to $2, so it must be dead.
Two is much closer to zero, by the way, than 3,000, right? Just for everyone keeping track of
it. Well, it's all relative, right?
Of course.
So we currently dropped like 80% or whatever number is. So, but the thing I saw was that the fundamentals of Bitcoin didn't change, right? If anything, it got better over that 1 year period. And the same thing for what happened last year, right? The price of all cryptocurrency dropped 80 to 90%, but for, I would say, just like the strong ones, right? The fundamentals didn't change. If anything, we're getting better. We have like back coming out. We have potentially ETFs getting approved. It's just getting more and more mainstream. So the price does what the price does, right? It gets pumped up to a really high and then it will drop back down. It's trying to figure out, the reason why it's so volatile is because no one really knows the future, right? And for a company, the future is within a certain range. So the price doesn't fluctuate that much. But for like Bitcoin, the future of Bitcoin, it could become the world reserve currency or it can be dead in a few years. Right. So the future, the difference is so high. So that's why it's so volatile.
Yeah.
Like an exchange gets hacked, Bitcoin price like takes a dump because people think that you can't secure the coins well, it's not going to succeed, it's going to go to zero.
And it also feels to me like the emotions that you're describing with positive and negative news play out a lot more in crypto than they would in other markets because it's mostly retail driven and humans, right? There's not tons of algorithms kind of running this stuff yet.
Yeah.
And so price is very, you know, is correlated very highly to human sentiment. You think that's correct?
Definitely. Like, for example, this current recent rise, like, it's hard to say what happened, right?
We thought that you bought the bottom too.
No. Like there was the April Fool's like article about Bitcoin ETFs getting approved. I think that like sparked something, right? I also saw like a Chinese tweet saying that, believing that that was true. Potentially there was something lost in translation. And then if people started buying because of that fake news, it could potentially cause some stop orders to trigger. And then a lot of people got in because seeing the price going up. So it could potentially be just triggered by fake news.
Yeah, don't tell people that fake news made them money. That'll really mess up American politics.
Yeah.
So let's talk about kind of how you see the future unfolding. Right. So we talked a little bit about the currencies, but you know, I think that in 2017 we saw this new funding mechanism for early stage technology and projects with the ICOs. That's drastically been reduced in terms of both the regulatory environment and I think investors' appetite for a lot of that stuff. Do we see that come back at some point in the future? Maybe does it come back, but it looks a little different? How do you think this plays out?
I mean, we do see a push for like STOs, right? So securities tokens. I think ICOs are a neat idea, but what happened was just was kind of unfortunate because a lot of people lost a lot of money. I mean, there's a reason why VC fundings and securities require like accredited investors, right? You need a certain level of expertise in investing or enough money to invest before the ICOs. And it's to protect people, right? It's you don't want to get scammed by the company promising some stuff and everyone, mom and pop's putting money into it and then get scammed. So we saw that with ICOs and there's a reason why they're not legal. Right. So I think there will be more regulations to kind of make this space safer. and also allow the benefits of tokens, right, of ICOs.
Mm-hmm. It feels to me like a lot of the protections that are in place today are the best that we've had previously, but mm-hmm. really education, right? Having some kind of education bar where you can't invest unless you take a test or you've got some base level of knowledge would be better served protecting people than, you know, hey, Charlie, you're rich. And so if you're rich, you must be smart. Go do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Right. I always joke and say that I know a lot of really rich, dumb people. Right. So we'll see. All right. And then how does that play into the IEOs that we're seeing now? It feels like we're talking about the alphabet, right? Like there's all these different combination of letters, but that initial exchange offerings that we're now starting to see, what's your take on that?
Honestly, I don't know too much about it. It seems just like a ICO to me. I mean, is it any different than other ICOs except that the exchange has vetted the company and mm-hmm. and said that this is not a scam? Mm-hmm. I guess it's just that, right?
It's like an exchange-sanctioned ICO.
Yeah.
Right, essentially. Yeah, I got it. Okay, and then going to the STOs, lots of hype, right? Lots of people talking about this idea that, hey, we're going to take real assets, whether they're actually true securities or traditional assets, and we're going to tokenize or digitize them. It sounds like you believe that will happen short term, long term. How does it play out?
It depends on the government regulations.
Okay.
Right. I guess certain countries are more open to it. And it really depends on the government, how they start.
Are there things you're worried about with the regulations, or you think it's just they haven't really given clear guidance?
They haven't given clear guidance.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I'm not really into this space, so mm-hmm. I'm kind of focused on the currency aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like the STOs will interact with the cryptocurrency? So like Bitcoin, Litecoin, other cryptocurrencies will be the currency of choice for that world? Or do you feel like people are trying to just digitize assets and then still use the fiat currencies? Like how much overlap do we see between cryptocurrencies, utility tokens, security tokens versus their more siloed aspects of the industry?
I mean, the thing I see is that the tokens would be easily like exchangeable or swappable with the cryptocurrencies we have right now, right? So that's the benefit of same for like government-backed cryptocurrencies, right? Mm-hmm. Once you're in this digital space, then it makes a very efficiently move things around.
Got it. What are you worried about moving forward? Like if you had to pick one or two things that keep you up at night in terms of the industry growing?
I can talk about like what I think, like what we need to solve, right?
Okay.
So
these aren't things that you're necessarily worried about. They're things that you believe are important problems that need to be solved for us to keep moving forward.
Yeah. So we need to make it easier for people to store their own currencies, right? Mm-hmm. Or their own cryptos. So instead of like right now, like 90% probably of people store their cryptocurrencies on exchanges
mm-hmm.
or hosted wallet, just because it's so hard to do it themselves. So the exchanges or hosted wallets actually do a better job than individuals to mm-hmm. store their own coins. We're seeing like a lot of sales of like the Ledger and Trezor hardware wallets, but they're still not like easy to use, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we really need to make that easy to use. Usability is very important. It's something that we've been working on for many years, but it's just something we need to kind of solve or make it a lot better.
Do you think that is a technical problem? It's a like user experience problem? Where do you think the big obstacle there lies, right? Because if people have been working on it for years, and we don't have something that you and I can say with confidence is a perfect solution, what's holding us back there?
The problem is it's a security and usability, I feel like, is always a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's really secure is just hard to use. So like, for example, one of the best ways to secure your coins is to like put in a paper wallet and put in a bank safe or split it using some kind of Shamir Secret or something like that, where you split it and make it safe. But that's just really hard to use, right? You can't use it every day if your money is locked away in the bank safe. The easiest way to use cryptocurrency is having a mobile wallet where the money is, it's like hosted, right? Like, for example, the Coinbase mobile wallet is extremely easy to use, but then you're trusting Coinbase, right? So it's definitely a challenge to find the right balance between security and ease of use.
Gotcha. You mentioned Coinbase, and you were there in the very early days. Tell us a little bit about what that experience was like, why did you join Coinbase out of everything you could have done coming out of Google? Why that company?
Yeah, so in 2013, I joined Coinbase. At that time, I wasn't really looking for another company. I mean, Google is such a great company. It's good benefits, good pay.
Good food.
And I went to Coinbase. They paid me half as much. I had to travel like an hour commute to San Francisco and work like twice as hard.
Charlie, but, this doesn't sound like a good deal.
Well, it was a good deal. I mean, I decided to do that because I was passionate about Bitcoin. So the reason why I joined Coinbase is I realized that in order for cryptocurrencies to succeed, it has to be easy to use, right? Mm-hmm. So, and easy to kind of get into the system, to get into the ecosystem. So buying Bitcoin at that time was just hard, right? Mm-hmm. Especially for US people in the US. Mm-hmm. In 2011, you had to wire money to Japan, but in 2013, there's still some exchanges, but it's still like out of the country and it's not getting into your bank account. So Coinbase started doing, letting people buy Bitcoins with their bank account. You connect your bank account, they do an ACH pull of the money, and then they give you Bitcoins a few days later when they got the money. So it just makes buying Bitcoin or getting into it very easy. And I feel like that was very important. So I joined Coinbase to kind of make that happen.
Got it. You got tired of meeting people in Starbucks, so you decided to build a solution for it.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, and so how long were you there for?
4 years, almost 4 years, yeah.
What was the vision early in terms of, can Coinbase solve all the problems? Was it just we want to help people buy Bitcoin? Was there a belief that eventually you could add other assets? Kind of, what were those conversations like then compared to what the company's doing today?
The belief was always that with an open finance, we can kind of revolutionize finance, right, with cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin specifically. And the first step was just to let people get into Bitcoin easily. And I mean, that's also the other belief was that we wanted to do it kind of the right way, like work within the system. So getting all the money transfer licenses, work with regulations, work with regulators, and support it and push for regulation supporting Bitcoin and just make it easy for people to get in.
Got it. I've been really impressed, I think, with the company's ability to not only add more assets in terms of through going through a bear market, but also push into other geographies. But I don't think they operate today in Japan, Korea, or China. And so it's pretty shocking to see the size of how big it's gone from when you first started to today without operating in what many would argue are three of the most important jurisdictions in the world.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they move into those jurisdictions. Coinbase had investments from Japan, from Japanese companies or funds. So I wouldn't be surprised if they move into Japan, China, and Korea.
Don't hold me to it, but I think that they've applied for the licensing in Japan. I just don't think they've received it yet.
I guess they would need the licenses before they can open up.
For sure. And then coming from that experience, seeing the rise of the Binances of the world who said, hey, look, we're going to start outside the United States. We're going to take a different regulatory approach. Pros, cons of each one? Do you think that, again, there's kind of coexistence, or do you think that one model eventually trumps all the others?
I think they'll coexist. I think there's room for companies like exchanges like Binance's to do it their way, right? There's also a space for companies like Coinbase doing it the more like following the regulation and sticking by the book way. I think both will succeed and coexist.
For sure. All right, before I finish up and we'll let everyone ask all their questions, ask a couple of rapid fire questions. You don't have to answer quickly, but what do you think is the most important company in crypto? Can't say Litecoin either.
Litecoin Foundation? Most important company in crypto. I still think Coinbase.
Coinbase? Yeah. Okay. Explain why the most important.
Just the fact that they're able to bring in so many people into the space, just making it very easy for people to buy, sell, and use cryptocurrencies.
Yeah.
I think it's, yeah, they've done a lot of good for crypto.
I think it would be hard for people to argue that they haven't definitely helped onboard, you know, millions of people for
It's kind of unfortunate that they get hated on by a lot of the core Bitcoin maximalist people. Mm-hmm. It's not black and white, right? They've definitely made mistakes. Mm-hmm. I think their recent like Neutrino acquisition was pretty dumb.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the acquisition was dumb, or do you think the way that it was handled?
I think in terms of the
personnel.
Both, right? Okay. So they decided to acquire Neutrino. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they did enough due diligence on them.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the news hit that the people were upset, they doubled down on it and said that we did our due diligence and we decided it's still the right thing to do. I mean, that was just pretty dumb. Mm-hmm. And they had to backtrack on that.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't handle it well.
Yeah. And I think part of it too is, I spend most of my days talking to founders all day long, and they have to make so many high risk and important decisions on a daily basis that they're going to mess some of them up.
Sure, right? For sure. Yeah.
That one just happens to be one that was made in public. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people will argue whether they were right or not, but I think that the blowback was probably more painful than it needed to be.
Yeah. I mean, companies definitely make mistakes all the time.
Mm-hmm. And any mistakes that you think that you made in building Litecoin or with the Litecoin Foundation? Anything that sticks out to you as, we wish we hadn't done X?
Nothing comes to the top of my head.
All right. Except for if you didn't buy the bottom, then you...
What's that?
You didn't buy the bottom, then you regret that?
No, I didn't buy the bottom. Well, I mean, I sold because of my perceived conflict of interest or misalignment of interest, right? So I'm focused on adoption of Litecoin, and the price is just definitely distracting. And I'm so public, I don't want to like have to second guess why I'm making this tweet. Is it because I want to like pump the price and and make myself more money, or is it because it's actually good for Litecoin? So I just wanted to kind of remove those two things.
How bad did it get, right? When in 2017, when people were really kind of paying attention to price a lot, bull markets going crazy. I've been on the other side of a lot of, you know, kind of the good and bad of social media. Mm-hmm. How bad did it get for you in terms of people, you know, being upset about things that you were doing or you know, the perception that you were affecting the price?
It was definitely quite bad, right? So, like I would post something like some good news and potentially it would affect the price. And then people would be saying saying that I'm like,
you're
insider trading or like bought it before I released this news or I'm pumping it or whatnot. Yeah. It was quite annoying. And if I don't say anything, if I don't post about good things about Litecoin and the price is not doing well, people would like complain about why am I not saying anything good about Litecoin. If I say something good about Bitcoin, people would complain. It's quite annoying. So I started ignoring that. I also decided to kind of sell my Litecoins. I actually personally did think that it's going to keep going up. Like I didn't think that it was going to, like that was a peak because everyone thought the price was going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to hit 1,000. So I definitely didn't
want to sell. Litecoin was going to hit 1,000?
Yeah.
Wow. Is what it was probably 100, 120?
It was like 300.
Oh, got to 300. Okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, I mean.
Yeah.
In hindsight, right?
Yeah. Because I mean, look, the last was like, what, last 6 weeks of 2017 when everything just went vertical.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Litecoin being $100, right? And it just really goes from 100 to 300 in 6-8 weeks. It's pretty crazy. Okay. So, what do you think is the one regulation that you would change or improve if you could? Like, what's the one regulation that sticks out that's just doesn't make sense?
Oh, I definitely have one. So I would like to see, being able to spend coins without paying capital gains taxes on them. So like for purchases, right? If you're buying coffee, get them to say, you don't have to figure out like when you got this 0.01 Bitcoin or 0.0001 Bitcoin, how much you paid for it and how much is capital gains. Mm-hmm. That just makes like spending cryptocurrency like impossible. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you don't report taxes on them, which I think most people probably don't, because it's just impossible to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, what you're describing right throughout this entire talk is everything around adoption. There's the technology, there's the kind of narrative or marketing and the psychological aspect. There's the regulation. There's a lot that goes into getting people to use a new currency that if you just look at it from the surface, doesn't appear to be very complex, but is actually highly difficult to do.
Yeah. For sure.
Right. Okay. What's the one area of crypto that you think people should be talking about, but they're not? Like something that you're excited about that you think isn't getting enough attention?
One thing I'm kind of working on and excited about these days is fungibility.
Okay.
Making Litecoin or cryptocurrency more fungible. I think if you look at like all the good properties of sound money, fungibility is the one thing that's missing from Bitcoin and Litecoin.
Mm-hmm. Explain to people what you mean by fungibility.
So every basic idea is that every coin is equal to every other coin. So for example, with US dollar, if I go into a store to buy something, I have two $20 bills in my wallet. It doesn't matter which one I use. Right. They're essentially the same. They're fungible. It's not the case with Bitcoin and Litecoin today. Right? If you have two outputs to choose from, the wallet chooses for you. So a lot of times you don't even know. But if you have two outputs to choose from, which one to spend, one of them could be linked to some other purchases you made, or if you bought something off the dark night markets, or if you like gambled with it, the other coin might not have that history. Or it could be you bought like 10 Bitcoins from an exchange and then you're sending 0.001 to a friend for something. And then they saw that, oh, you have 10 Bitcoins. Mm-hmm. It's just revealing some history or some private information that you don't want to reveal. So that makes the coins not fungible.
And are you interested in this because of the privacy aspects or for some other reason?
I'm interested in it because I want crypto to be like perfect sound money, right?
Yep.
So it's something that we don't have right now, fungibility. So fungibility and privacy kind of go hand in hand, right? So in order for a coin to be fungible, it has to be private. If it's not private, then you're leaking some information, and that information could be used against you for some thing, and which makes it not fungible.
Got it.
So to get fungibility, you need like privacy.
Makes sense. What's the most important book you've ever read?
Most important book? That's a good question.
I only ask good questions. Come on.
Game of Thrones.
I figured there'd be somebody in the audience that liked that.
Actually, Game of Thrones is a really good book.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. I haven't read it. All right. The only reason why I came up here is to talk to you about aliens. So let's talk about aliens. Believer, non-believer?
I'm a believer.
Believer?
Yeah.
What is your logic for believing aliens if we've never seen or heard of them?
You talking about real aliens or illegal immigrants?
I know you're a professional alien believer. If you want to immediately start the conversation, are we talking about the real aliens or the other ones?
I think that just given how big the universe or space is, that I mean, there's this equation, right? I forgot the name of the equation where,
you know, somebody hit me with this live on a podcast, and I forget the name of it, and I was blown away that somebody was smart enough to figure out the math of.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an estimate, right? Given the all the probabilities multiplied together, the size of the universe, how many solar systems there are, how many planets per solar system. Mm-hmm. On the planets that have potential environment that can sustain life, and what are chances of that life could form and not. If you multiply all that together, the probability is pretty high that there's more than one of this happening, right?
So when I first started asking this question, it was because I was thinking, are there alien pets, right? We always think of aliens as the human-like creature, the way that they're perceived in movies and books. Do you think that there's multi-species life out there, or do you think it's just one set of aliens?
I mean, if you think there's more than humans, then there's got to be more, right? I mean, it's not going to, like, we have pets, so.
So that's what I generally believe, that if there are aliens, which I think there are, then there's probably alien pets as well, but we just never incorporate them.
But we're probably pets to aliens. They're probably like we don't even know it.
Yeah.
Right? Just like the ants don't know that we're looking at them. Right.
Are you a big simulation guy? You know about this?
That the whole universe is a simulation?
Yeah, that we're living in the simulation.
No, I don't think so.
No?
No.
You think that it's just where we could be the pets of some other
that's possible.
Species? Yeah. It's fair. All right, before we take questions, I let everyone ask me one question. What one question do you have for me?
Are we out of the bear market?
Oh, come on. because I am with you, and whether you meant to or not, you sold the top, and I'm hoping you're lying and that you actually bought the bottom. I think it's probably more likely than not that we've kind of seen the bottom. But as many people in crypto learn, trying to time this stuff is a fool's game. So we'll see how it plays out. All right, who has any questions? Oh, right here. Just scream and we'll repeat it.
There's a microphone over there if you want.
Oh, there's a line actually. If you want to get up in front of this microphone in the middle of the aisle.
Hi, my name is Tamara. Thank you so much. You guys talked a lot about how news and people's perceptions kind of drive the cost of the different coins. If you could design your own ideal news experience for reading about cryptocurrency news, what would that be like for you and why?
Twitter.
I mean, that's true, right? Twitter is like the great source of news for cryptocurrency. Twitter has become such a good platform for cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how so much of the news is reported directly there, right? Like people just, they don't go to reporters. They don't do it. They just have their own audience.
It's just
talk
easy.
Directly to people. Yeah. I think the aspects of Twitter are really interesting, of like the ability for anyone to put information out there. And then, I mean, look, part of you talking about how aggressive people got in terms of responding to things that you were tweeting about Litecoin, et cetera. There is an element of like the attrition of ideas on Twitter, right? Where when people say something stupid, they get told very quickly. Mm-hmm. But that can go in a positive or a negative way.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Charlie, what's up? My name is Adam. We've talked a few times. So I don't think anyone here knows this about you other than me and a few other people, but you were a wrestler in high school, which is the hardest sport in the world, which probably leads you to make some very risky decisions. One which I like very much is you sponsored the recent UFC event, and you brought on Ben Askren to the Litecoin team. And Ben Askren, if no one knows this, he's an Olympic wrestler, represented the United States in the Olympics 2008. He's also probably the pound-for-pound best mixed martial arts fighter on the planet right now, and for all intents and purposes, will probably be UFC champion by Christmas. So because you have what is probably the future UFC champion as part of the Litecoin Foundation, how do you plan on using that?
Now we're going to the moon. it's a funny story. Like Ben Askren, he's really into sound money. So he was, so I got introduced to him and talked to him quite a bit about just like his belief of sound money. And he's also an amazing wrestler or MMA fighter. So it's actually really, really cool that he's out there pushing cryptocurrencies and also doing well in UFC. So it'd be cool to see him become champion.
Well, I'm actually pretty close friends with John and Kim, your bodyguard. I'm also an ex MMA fighter myself. So I keep up with the sport a lot. And a lot of times I will stream events. And when I was streaming the UFC event that you sponsored, Jones versus Gustafsson, there's a live chat and there's thousands of people in that live chat. And they're all talk nonsense. But for the first time ever, when they announced Litecoin is the official cryptocurrency of the UFC, the chat stopped and everyone just started talking about Litecoin. They've never done that with any other sponsor I've ever seen sponsor a UFC event. So I think that's a really, really good sign. And I just can't wait to see see this further and see you sponsor more fighters. I think that's awesome.
Thanks.
And
that's cool.
Who would win in a match between you and Ben Askren?
Probably Ben Askren.
let's tape that and find out.
I've retired from fighting. Ben.
Yeah.
How you guys doing? So my question relates, I just want your opinion. So it's about block size. So Bitcoin, obviously, I remember in 2017, the bull run, the fees were just astronomical. And then you have Bitcoin Cash and like Nano. It's a point of contention for a lot of projects saying this is a real concern. I want to know your opinion. Is this something that is going to be a problem, hinder acceptance and growth in the future? Is it something we should be concerned with? Does Lightning help it? What are your thoughts?
Sure. So, question about block size, right? So, let me talk about a bit about kind of like the reason why this is an issue, right? So, decentralization is inefficient, right? So, for example, if you're comparing like Bitcoin with Visa, let's say, has one like computer running everything. They can process thousands or millions of transactions a second. But Bitcoin can only do like 7 transactions per second. Why is that? It's because like Bitcoin, everything has to be processed by 10,000 computers or ideally more, right? So everything's decentralized and no one has control over it. So it's inefficient. And the reason why we want this inefficiency is because we get decentralization, which gives us censorship resistance, right? So with Visa, you can go to Visa and say, reverse this transaction. Mm-hmm. And if the government does that, they have to. So they have control. With Bitcoin, you can't do that. So decentralization gives us censorship resistant. The reason why we have like a block size limit, or why it makes sense to limit the block size, is because you don't want if the block size was infinite, right? You can put anything in the block size in a block, then you have like, you can put, basically you're using this extremely inefficient database to store anything you want. And every transaction pays the same amount in fees. No matter if it's sending like $1 million or if it's sending $2, right? If you're buying coffee, you're paying X amount of fees. You're sending like $10 million between banks, you're paying the same amount of fees. So when that happens, it's unfair to, if you're using it inefficiently, then you're basically screwing everyone over. Mm-hmm. So If you look at like a chain like Bitcoin SV or even Bitcoin Cash, if it just grows indefinitely, then you have like cat photos, or they're putting like high resolution photos on the blockchain, right? That's just like really dumb, because then everyone has to hold that, everyone has to process that. It makes it so inefficient, so hard. Then you only have a few nodes that can do that, and then before you know it, it becomes centralized. So that's why block size is so important, that we kind of have to protect it, right? We can't let it. It's hard to say what's the optimal block size. So a couple of years ago with the SegWit2x like debate, I think a 2x the block size is fine, right? But if not everyone agrees, then we shouldn't do it. So that's why we didn't follow and do the 2x increase with a hard fork. It's fine for coins like Bitcoin Cash to experiment with higher block size. Litecoin even has 4x the effective block size as Bitcoin, right? So it's, to a certain point, if you increase it too much, or if you put too much crap into the blockchain, it becomes centralized. And we definitely don't want that, right? We don't want, the value of Bitcoin is the fact that it's censorship resistant and immutable. We don't want to hurt that value by making it so you can put anything on the blockchain. So that said, I think the solution is second layer scaling solutions like Lightning Network and other solutions, right? Where the base chain is secure, and it's decentralized, but you build on top of that and you can really scale pretty well on top of it. Thank you.
Hi guys, my name's Cameron. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys. It's an honor. Actually, I follow you guys on everything pretty much. So I run a IT department for a local government in LA. My background's in geographic information science. So it's a fancy word for maps and data. My question is, have you came across, what do you guys think about, use cases for, you know, local government and bringing in, you know, this term Internet of Things and IoT and bringing in geolocation, geo-blockchain, you know, sensors and technology, and kind of any use cases that you're aware of, you know, for government and like local government.
So it's a difficult question to answer, just because I think the short answer is we don't know. The thing I will say is, to me, what most of this industry is about is just taking old assets, right? Kind of analog or electronic world assets and turning them into truly digital assets. So you think of Bitcoin, right? What Coinbase does is essentially lets you put, you know, bad money in, right? Analog or fiat currency in, and you get out sound money and you get this digital currency. I think that most of crypto, whether it's utility tokens, security tokens, or other cryptocurrencies, follow that similar framework. And it's just upgrading those assets, right? So we'll still have the stocks, bonds, currencies, and commodities just in a digital format. That goes to your point about like when you get to the Internet of Things, I always joke and say, you know, Bitcoin is just money for the machines, right? And what I mean by that is the automation, the Internet of Things, all the stuff that I think most people buy into is going to happen. It can't use the old assets, right? You know, if you think of the fiat currencies before Coinbase, you had to wire money to a bank in Japan, right? Then you could wire money to Coinbase, and it was a little bit more efficient. We helped move it to this point where, you know, it made it easier to buy stuff, but it still wasn't good enough for, let's say, true automation, right? And so I think that when you have digital currencies, stocks, bonds, and commodities, now the machines can really like unleash their potential. And so that's like a framework to think about it. How that actually plays out in reality, I have no clue. In a local government, I definitely don't know. But I think that's the framework I would use to kind of look at that.
Awesome. I like to joke that Bitcoin makes it possible for Skynet to happen. So before Bitcoin, right, a computer AI cannot survive out in the wild because they can't make money. They can't create a bank account. They can't open a bank account. They can't make money. They can't survive. They can't pay for storage. They can't pay for themselves. But with Bitcoin, they can now make money. They don't need to open a bank account. They make money, and then they can now buy their upgrades, hardware, whatever, right? So like real, true AI can now actually happen.
I mean, look, it sounds on the fringe, I think, as a thought process, but really what we're talking about here is slowly but surely humans in general are beginning to trust the machines and algorithms over other humans, right? And so Bitcoin, to me, whether it's the machines just use it for themselves because they trust the algorithms, that they're smart and they get it, to would you rather trust a currency that's backed by, you know, frankly, a bunch of old white guys who go in a room and decide the rate decision next quarter? Or would you rather trust an algorithm that you can actually read the code? I think that 50 years ago, like, people trusted the individuals. 50 years from now, it's likely that they're going to trust the software and the code.
Totally. Thank you.
Hey, Charlie. I can't find my Litecoin Cash. Do you know where it is? Does anybody know where my Litecoin Cash is?
Litecoin Cash is a scam.
All right. Thanks.
Wow. You got dedication to stand in line to ask that.
Hey, Pomp, this is actually more for you. I know you're a big fan of Bitcoin, but I was wondering if you could talk more about your investment thesis on things that are not Bitcoin.
Yeah, they're ambushing me now. pretty much, I think of investing, especially from like the professional job standpoint, in three ways. One, Bitcoin as a digital currency that's non-correlated, asymmetric return, by introducing it into the portfolios of the institutions that we work with. It's likely to reduce risk and put them in a good place. The second thing is, if you think of the crypto market or the industry as a public and private side, so the public is the liquid crypto, private is equity. The public markets, I basically just give up. I'm not a great as trader as this guy, and so I just say we're not going to trade, but we will index. And was it last year we came out with this $1 million challenge that over the next decade, crypto will outperform the S&P 500, right? So an index that we have versus the S&P. Again, that's just as much a confidence in crypto as it is an outlook on public equities. And then in the private markets, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is if you had invested in the equity of, I think it's Kraken, Binance, Coinbase, Bitmain, I mean, just go down the line, right? And on the same day that you invested in the seed or series A of those companies, you had bought Bitcoin. Even though Bitcoin is the best performing asset over the last decade, you actually would have made more money in the equity investment than you would have in the appreciation of Bitcoin. And so what you get is you get this high volatility, right? And, you know, we talked about it earlier, but the equity investments, not only are they easier for people to understand in the institutional world, but also I think that there's an argument to be made for the financial performance as well. And so we really just focus Bitcoin, index liquid market, and then we want to own equity in the private markets.
Wow. Thank you so much. One follow-up question. Do you have any investment thesis, I guess, towards like tokens or anything like that, or maybe stable coins?
No.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Hey guys, I have kind of a similar question, Pomp, so apologies for the ambush.
You guys are supposed to be asking Charlie questions, not me.
I'm working with Maker right now and extracting information off the Ethereum blockchain. And I guess as an investment process, like, you know, what's the due diligence like? Because when you dive into these sort of complicated projects, you start to be skeptical about, you know, some white paper saying we're going to do all these crazy things. And then when you look at the underlying tooling, it's really, you know, it needs a lot of work to deliver. So I'm just curious what your due diligence process is.
So when you created Litecoin, did you write a white paper?
Yeah, the paper is all white.
what did you do when you started? You just started writing code, right?
Yeah.
And you eventually created a product and you launched it.
Yeah.
Right. I think that when you look at, you know, yes, Bitcoin has a white paper, but majority of the work was done by the time the white paper ever saw, you know, the light of day. I'm just not a huge believer in this thing of like, let me write down, whether it's in a deck or a white paper, you know, this grand plan to take over the world. And I'm much more like, I have a propensity to invest in things where just they're showing that they have momentum, they've built things, they've launched products, that, you know, and look, the silliest ideas are the ones that usually end up being the most powerful, right? So if you think of Uber was a way for Travis and his friends to impress people by getting picked up by black cars. Like, that doesn't sound like a lot of people need that service, right? Airbnb, they had air mattresses in their kitchen. Doesn't sound like that's going to really change the world, right? Amazon, they're selling books, but that was pretty much it, right? But then they become these big multi-billion-dollar companies because they understand how to just build products that people want, right? And how to solve those problems. But I think it's just the mania around the white papers and the like intellectual Olympics. Maybe it's just because I'm not smart, but I just not very interested in it.
Thanks, guys.
Hi, my name is Harley. I understand the fungibility aspect, like your point. I was wondering Litecoin was going to solve that for Bitcoin, like as in people are going to use Litecoin as a transaction to keep their fund secret of like, you know, so, you know, I'm fairly new to this space. So, yeah, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so the current plan, we're looking into a technology called Mimblewimble, which is a way to make things more private, and also it also scales pretty well. And to do it in a certain way where it's a kind of a soft fork upgrade where we can upgrade Litecoin to add this extension blocks where it's all Mimblewimble. So we're just trying it out and see how it goes. Whether or not Bitcoin will actually go the same route, we'll see. Obviously, it's not up to me. But I think making Litecoin more fungible is
My last question, do you think the bear market's over or?
No, he turned it on you.
Well, people keep always asking me like, do I think the price will go up or down? Like if anyone tells you they know, they're lying, right? No one knows if the price will go up or down. So the bear market, I mean, I've seen a few bull and bear markets. I've seen like some of you think the bear market's over, but then it drops like further, right? And also, sometimes it recovers and it actually doesn't come back down. So it's, who knows, right? I think it's good. We're seeing some recovery. but don't like go all in, right? I tell people never to go all in.
And my last one, how can I be more connected with people in this space, specifically on Litecoin? Like, is there any forums you recommend or websites where I could, you know?
Go to like Reddit, right? Uh-huh. Bitcoin and Litecoin, /Bitcoin/Litecoin. Just don't go to /BTC. That's not good.
Thank you.
All right, last two questions.
Hey, Charlie. I'm just wondering what your thoughts were on the future of public blockchain coins. I know that here in the United States that some exchanges will actually comb your history to make sure you don't have any terms or conditions violations. And then I'm a big user of the Coinbase Earn airdrops, and they highlight a lot of the new coins that are coming out that actually do offer a good degree of privacy. So I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
I think I talked about it a bit, right? I think privacy and fungibility is very important. So I think financial privacy is important. So it's not cool that people know like how many coins you have just because you sent them something. So yeah, I think we should work on making coins more private and more fungible.
Hi. So I was wondering, do you see all these coins as mostly money, or do you give providence to the aspect that you could sort of save data in these blockchains? I kind of see these as fancy databases that anybody who mines can insert into. And I was wondering if you sort of preferred storing in the UTXO set, or if you like using just OpReturn, any sort of value in using Bitcoin as a data store and not so much as a money.
Yeah. So using it as a data store is just a very expensive data store, right? So blockchains are inefficient by definition. So in order for, like, blockchain is not for everything, right? For money, I think it makes sense. The inefficiency, the cost of mining and everything is worth it because we're getting something very valuable, which is censorship resistant and immutability. But for other things, like I said this many times, like for an app like CryptoKitties, right? It took the whole, like pretty much took the whole Ethereum blockchain down because it's so inefficient, right? If Amazon or Google is running a CryptoKitties app on their data center, people would run it perfectly fine. No one would actually be afraid that Google or Amazon will steal their CryptoKitties or censor their transaction. So there's no reason why things like CryptoKitties need to be on a blockchain, right? It doesn't make any sense. It's just inefficient for no reason. Whereas there might be some applications that make sense, right? I think some of the most popular applications on like Ethereum or Tron are like gambling applications, right? Or casinos. And the reason why they're popular is because you can't do that anywhere else. Right? You can't just gamble your money away anywhere else, but you can do it on Tron or Ethereum, right? And those will be popular because there's a reason why they exist, right? It's inefficient, but yeah. It's getting, there's a reason for it.
So I understand how you feel about, you know, Roger Cash and Greg Wright and all that, but how do you feel about apps like Memo Cash or Blockchain? Are you familiar with those?
No.
Basically, just people are tweeting, and I guess it's all on the blockchain.
Is it like saving tweets on a blockchain?
Yeah.
I think it's neat to experiment with it, but I think the inefficiency will catch up to them. Basically, the reason why it works right now is the block rewards. Right? All these coins are creating block rewards. They're basically using that block rewards to pay for storing stuff on the blockchain. But as the block rewards approaches zero, then no one's willing to pay for it. Then it'll all come crashing down.
Not your keys, not your crypto. I'm sure you've heard that by now. Well, with the Monarch Wallet, you own the keys to your financial castle. They're bringing the best of all crypto services into one place, the Monarch Wallet. You can send, store, and receive thousands of cryptocurrencies. You can even earn interest of up to 7.1% on your crypto. The decentralized Monarch Wallet even has a built-in decentralized exchange so you can quickly swap tokens in wallet. If that wasn't enough, it has a portfolio tracker and a news section. The website is www.monarchtoken.io. You can go there or download it in the Apple or Android store.
Hey everyone, Pop here. If you like this episode of Off the Chain and want to help us take crypto to the top of the Apple, Spotify, and other podcast charts, please do us a favor and rate, review, and subscribe. To review, simply go to the Off the Chain homepage, scroll down until you see the five blank stars. Taking 15 seconds to fill those stars in and leave a quick review goes a long way in helping us take the entire crypto ecosystem to the top of the charts. I appreciate you listening and see you next time on Off the Chain.